Episode 184, Brian Clayton, co-founder and CEO of GreenPal.
Ooh, my favorite mistake. It's hard to pick one, but...
I'm Mark Graben. This is My Favorite Mistake. In this podcast, you'll hear business leaders and other really interesting people talking about their favorite mistakes. Because we all make mistakes. But what matters is learning from our mistakes instead of repeating them over and over again. So this is the place for honest reflection and conversation, personal growth, and professional success. Visit our website at myfavoritemistakepodcast.com.
To learn more about Brian and his company GreenPal, look for links in the show notes or go to markgraben.com/mistake184.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to My Favorite Mistake. I'm Mark Graben. We're joined today by Brian Clayton. He's the co-founder and CEO of GreenPal. It's an online marketplace that connects homeowners with local lawn care professionals. GreenPal has been called the Uber for lawn care by Entrepreneur Magazine, and they have over 100,000 active users completing thousands of transactions per day. So before I tell you a little bit more about Brian, welcome to the show, Brian. How are you?
Mark, thanks for having me on. It's great to be here.
Yeah, I hope those numbers have grown since your bio was written, but it's at least that many users, that many transactions, right?
That's right. Yeah, actually, we're up almost up to 300,000 users using the platform. So I probably need to update that bio.
Or that's, we'll make sure the show notes reflect the growth there. So before starting GreenPal a decade ago, Brian founded Peachtree Inc., which was one of the largest landscaping companies in Tennessee. He grew it to over 150 people and $10 million a year in annual revenue before it was acquired in 2013. So Brian's an interest and expertise related to entrepreneurship and small business growth, marketing, and bootstrapping businesses from zero revenue to profitability and exit. So we'll get to talk more about GreenPal and your different experiences. But, you know, from all the things you've done in your career, Brian, I'm really curious to hear about your favorite mistake.
Ooh, my favorite mistake. It's hard to pick one, but one mistake that we made starting GreenPal was almost, it was naivete as an asset. So when we started the business, you know, I sold my landscaping company and I thought I had this idea for an app should exist for hiring lawn mowing services. There should be like an Uber app for lawn care. And my mistake was I thought all we had to do was just pay a dev shop to build what we thought GreenPal should be. And we would market it and be off and going. And we would do the marketing and business ops. And we could outsource the tech. And that turned out to be a big mistake. It cost us $150,000 with a dev shop. And it took them 9 months to build what we thought GreenPal should be. And we launched it. And it was a total failure. It didn't have the features it needed. It was clunky. It was hard to use. It was confusing, poorly designed. It didn't work, quite frankly, and we had to start all over. So we wasted 150 grand, almost a year, and probably wasting the time was the biggest mistake. And so, big mistake. Looking back, it's kind of as silly as wanting to open a restaurant, but you don't have a chef, and you've never cooked anything in your life. You have no recipes. Yeah. You don't even like cooking. you know, you're really good at the microwave. And you've seen cooking shows, but you want to start a restaurant. So that was a big mistake, but it got us in the game. And here we are 10 years later, we're a 10-year overnight success. And we learned how to code and built the software ourselves.
Wow. So thank you for sharing that, Brian. And, you know, I'd like to dig, into that story a little bit more. I mean, it's great to hear that it wasn't a fatal mistake as far as the business went, that you were able to, adjust, recover, and move forward. So that's good, first off.
Yeah, I think, you know, business is a series of going from one failure to the next without a loss of enthusiasm. And so you're going to make mistakes. You're going to screw up, try to learn from them and keep going. I think as an entrepreneur, as a founder, you want to make mistakes, but you want to avoid the risk of ruin. So don't just put all your chips in this. So for us, like the, what would have made it a fatal mistake would have been if we had spent every last dime we had to our name and maybe had borrowed the money from a loan shark or something. And then we would have had to go get like day jobs to pay it back or something. So I think you want to like leverage, but not leap. And so that was what causes it to not be fatal.
And, you know, with a lot of mistakes, I mean, we find out in hindsight that it was a mistake. We make the decision we make at the moment because we think it's a good decision or the right decision, if not the best decision. I'm curious, you know, this is a question of curiosity, not beating you up for this. Where did you get the idea that you could outsource the tech and then focus on the marketing and the ongoing operations?
I think it was, there wasn't like validation for this. You know, we didn't like say, oh, well, look, you know, the Airbnb guys didn't know how to code and they just outsourced it and they got rich and we could do that. Like there was no parallel example that it did work. I think for us, it was very much wishful thinking. We didn't want to do the hard work of learning how to develop software. That really sucked. It took like 3 years. It was really hard. And so there was that. And then the people we were talking to were like, oh yeah, you could totally pay us to do this. And we can handle it. You handle the business. We'll handle the tech. And so we were kind of seduced by that. It wasn't their fault. It was really kind of our fault. But yeah, it was very much wishful thinking, I guess you could say.
And what was do you remember the first inkling of realizing, oh no, this isn't working out? Was it after the 9 months when the quote unquote final, as final as software ever is, the final product got delivered? Or were you starting to wonder along the way if they were going to be able to deliver something that really worked?
It was pretty clear that we screwed up, because first off, never would have done it if I knew it was going to take 9 months, because that was just too long. So it was supposed to have been a 4-month engagement, and it kept on dragging on and on and on, and then they would give it to us to test, and it just didn't feel right. So you could sit here and like walk through the workflow, and you know, you're no expert, but you can see there's 100 changes that need to be made. And so you request these changes and they're saying, okay, well, that's a change order and that's going to be another 20 grand. And you're like, I'm going to get $20,000 to death on this thing. And I'm going to be 78 years old by the time we get a product into the market. And so it became pretty clear. And I believe that I knew that it wasn't going to work halfway through. But at that point, it was like the sunk cost fallacy. We were already like, you know, 100 G's in with them, already 6 months in with them. At that point, I just wanted to get something into the market to where I could get some feedback from some users and then use that to like build it again. And that's what we did. We ended up getting it done, I guess, so to speak, and launching that. And it wasn't like it was this huge launch. We put it into the market and hustled up 100 people to use it, and then used that feedback to rewrite the whole thing from scratch ourselves from user feedback.
And yeah, that's a different approach. I think that's a typical software development approach, whether it's through, I don't know if you're familiar with, there's a methodology called the Lean Startup.
Absolutely. So
yeah,
the Lean Startup and the Startup Owner's Manual is another book written by a guy by the name of Steve Blank, who is Eric Ries's, I guess you could say, mentor. And those two books, you know, 1,000 pages, or, you know, those guys each wrote 2 books. And so 1,000 pages of text basically beats into your head one thing, which is get out of the building, go talk to early adopting users and use that feedback to build something that people will actually want to use. And it seems pretty commonsensical, but most people don't do it. And we didn't right. do it. And the approach we were taking with the dev shop was the antithesis to the Lean Startup. It was exactly the opposite. It was, let's get 4 guys in a room and dream up what we think a thing should be and like create this spec doc and waterfall process and like go to work. And then like in 9 months, we'll start to get the first bit of customer feedback. Whereas you really want to get some kind of thing into the marketplace, get some, close the gap between where you're at and a product in customers' hands, and then get that feedback, start building something that people want, even if it's just a prototype, will save you a lot of headache. And it may save you a decade of building stuff that nobody wants.
Yeah. And that's something Eric Ries talks about a lot of, you know, not losing money and time as an entrepreneur, but he uses that same language. Don't waste the time of developers building something that nobody is going to use. So I'm glad that you got exposed to that and you learned from, you know, the first iteration to go about it that way. Like, what, roughly speaking, what was the minimum viable product, if you will? What was that first prototype or first version of the software in terms of features that was right to get started?
Yeah, we knew it really is minimum viable mm-hmm. product because, yeah. What's the LinkedIn guy's name? It'll come to me. Reid Hoffman.
Right.
Reid Hoffman says that if you're not embarrassed by your first version, you waited too long.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the threshold. Just embarrassed enough, but it has to work. And it has to have the minimum feature set. So for us, we knew we had to have something where homeowners could jump on an app, request quotes, compare quotes, hire somebody, and then pay them and schedule them again. We had to have at least that. And then on the vendor side, we knew we could kind of hand crank that and like, literally like spoof that almost. And so if you only have 10 vendors, you can like run a schedule for them and call them and tell them where they need to be and like handle the photo upload for them. Like you can, so we did all that. We hand cranked the vendor side and nailed the, you know, got the customer experience kind of dialed in. Now we have 32,000 vendors, but back then we had 10. And so that's how we did it. We knew we needed to nail the consumer side and we spent like 2 years doing that, building out the homeowner side. And then from the feedback we were getting from suppliers is how we built up the supplier side.
And so what I hear you saying, and people who might not be familiar with this approach, correct me if I'm wrong, but what I hear you saying, Brian, is from the vendor side, a lot of that was being done very manually, if you will, behind the scenes. And then as you develop some of the methodology of how to do that, you could then code it in a way that was more scalable.
It was code. Yeah. And code build the right thing, you know, build what people wanted rather than like building this feature set that, you know, I had 15 years of landscaping experience. I knew what service providers wanted and needed, but still I wasn't like all knowing. I wasn't omniscient. I didn't know exactly, you know, what, you know, 32,000 different lawn mowing services wanted. So we built it baked in what they're telling us every day and what they wish it would do and what tools they needed. And so for service providers, it's one platform that they plug into and they can run their whole business. So everything from quoting and getting new yards really quickly to getting paid within 24 hours to marketing automation, CRM, scheduling, routing, organizing everything. It's like they can run their business 10 times more efficient on top of GreenPal. And that's the value we add to them. And then for homeowners, they can hire these folks right off the shelf, much like you would, you know, get food from DoorDash or buying something on Amazon. It's how it should be.
And so as the company has grown and you're a decade into it, Brian, you know, like what's your mindset around mistakes that might happen in the business today? How do you treat those? What's your philosophy on mistakes as you keep going?
The way I look at it is like the creative process of starting a business and scaling a business is not like chess. It's more like poker. So, you know, in chess, you can always like rewind the game and like pinpoint the exact moment. That's where you screwed up. and that you should have done this, and you can learn from that, and like that's how chess like progresses. Whereas poker, a lot of times this was all the information I had at disposal at that moment, and I made the best call that I could, and I made the best bet I could. I can't beat myself up. I played that hand how I should have played it. It didn't work out, but I still played it how I should have played it. And so I think startups and founders and founding a business is like poker and less like chess. And so, you know, I'm not a huge poker guy, but I know that you can play it. You know, you play the hands, you know, how they should be played. And sometimes it doesn't work out. And that's just the way it is. And that's how founding a business is.
It's funny. I heard a similar analogy very recently, not to get too sidetracked on it, but an interview with Garry Kasparov, the legendary chess master, and talking about, you know, geopolitical dynamics and, you know, Russia and Ukraine and heady stuff. I apologize for bringing that up, but he was asked about, you know, geopolitical chess moves. And he said, no. He brought up the poker analogy because he says, awesome. when you play chess, all of the information you could possibly need is right there, visible.
It's right there
on the board. Whereas poker, like I said, you don't know what cards are about to be, if you're playing Texas Hold'em, what cards are laying there. You don't know what cards the other players have, I guess. That's right.
And you, yeah. A lot of times it's gut. A lot of times, you know, you're making calculations on the fly. You know, you have data in startup land, and you use that, and you also use the qualitative feedback from your customers, and you make your bets, and you try not to run the risk of ruin. You don't bring your house deed to the table, and run the risk of ruin. Although sometimes people do that, it pays off. I mean, look at Elon Musk, the world's richest man. That guy, you know, went to zero a couple times. I mean, I know if I had $200 million, I wouldn't ever want to go to zero. And he did that after PayPal. And so it pays off.
He bet it all on SpaceX. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, when it works out, it looks great.
As we record this on May 13th, between recording and release, we'll see what happens with Twitter and with Tesla. That's all very up in the air right now at this recording.
Be interesting to see. Yeah. I think today he said he didn't want it anymore.
Or he's it's on pause, but he still wants it. That's
yeah.
What
he didn't want the bots.
That's what he says today. But, you know, so Brian, I mean, you know, your story here with GreenPal, you know, I appreciate it because it's a story of bouncing back from the first mistake, learning from that, doing things differently. I also wanted to ask you a little bit about lessons learned from your first company, from Peachtree. When we talked previously, you brought up the idea of company culture. And I was wondering if you could share some reflections on what you learned from the first go around that you've learned from and tried to do differently with GreenPal.
Yeah, you know, as a founder of a business, you get exactly the company culture you deserve. And so you get exactly the vibe, the enthusiasm from your people that you deserve. It's an extension of you. And in my first business, I grew it to over 150 folks. And I think it was year 7 or 8. I didn't know what the hell I was doing the whole way through. I made every mistake you could make and you tried to fix it along the way. And I was driving to the office and I just did not want to go there. I didn't like a lot of the people that worked for me. I just was pissed off. And it was just not a toxic environment. And I felt like victimized almost. I felt like, wow, this sucks. Why do I have to do this? What have I done here? And what I realized is, you built this. This is exactly what you deserve. You know, you deserve the environment that you created. And it took me a long time to really kind of self-reflect and realize all the mistakes I made, whether it was my attitude sucked or the enthusiasm I was bringing sucked, or I didn't make it a fun place to work, or I hired these people that weren't good fits and kept them on. And then those people that weren't good fits were a cancer to the rest of the people that were good, and they left. And so, And so I had to fix a lot of these things little by little and make it a fun place to work. And it took probably 3 years. But I'm glad I did it because it made me a better leader. It made it to where it was a fun place to work, to run. Those people became my family almost. When I sold the business, it was like one of the hardest things I ever had to do. And it took a lot of tactical things, a lot of me reading every John Maxwell book I could ever get my hands on, things like that. And in a way, looking back 15 years later, I'm glad it happened because, you know, that's how I learned how my leadership style.
Learning leadership through mistakes, it sounds like.
Yeah. And hopefully you don't screw it up too bad to where you can't fix it. Cause I think you can. I think you can screw it up to where it can't be fixed, but I was able to correct it over 2 or 3 years, fix it.
So it seems like that's something you're very mindful of now with Green Pal, of thinking about how the culture is evolving, right?
First thing I didn't want to mess up. And it's different because in the first business I had 100 plus people. Second, Green Pal is now 47. And it's a different type of teammate because the first business was like a construction company. So it was very much like blue collar, a laborer types of staff. Whereas the second business is more knowledge workers, you know, engineers, developers, designers, people that move pixels around, data scientists, you name it. So it's different in terms of how you recruit and how you challenge, you know, how do you motivate? And for me, you know, I am very, very, very scared to make bad hires because when you make a bad hire, it's you hire fast and fire faster, but that's easier said than done. It's really hard to let somebody go after you've screwed up and brought them on. So now what I try to do is I try to date before I marry. And so what I mean by that is like, let's just work together on a project basis for a couple months and let's bring you on. And then if that works, then let's bring you on a 1 month basis to see how that goes. And then let's check in, let's do 3 months. And then if that goes well and it's working, then let's move into a full-time formalized thing. And that's worked well for me. I look for a certain type of people. Like I look for like somebody who has like a chip on their shoulder almost. I don't want the guy that was like the high school quarterback who was like popular in high school and everybody loved him. Like I want the guy that maybe didn't get a date to prom. or
backup quarterback.
Yeah. Or maybe he didn't even make the team and from that, something has developed something to prove to the world. And that's the way he or she is and will always be. And the project they are working on is that thing. Like you've met people like this who just like pour their soul into what it is they're working on because that's the way they win at life. I mean, that's the way I am. And you know, my businesses have always been that way. And I have always had a chip on my shoulder. And so I look at people who are kind of like that, look for people that are kind of like that. And it's hard to find, but when you get those types of people in a room together, it really works well. And so I guess I'm more or less scared of screwing that up again. And so that's why I move slower than I probably should with hiring.
And it sounds like what you're saying around the quote unquote dating of the new employee that probably reduces some of the risk of a bad decision.
Yes. Also if we have a big like gaping hole and need, we can still get stuff done. Just not with people that we bring onto the bus, you know, like we can still get stuff done on a contract basis, on a freelance basis. But for people that we bring into the team and into the family, that's a big gap. And so we don't like let a spot go unfilled for like 6 months. Like if we needed somebody to really take our SDO by the range or something like that, we'll rely on contractors for as long as we have to until we find the right fit that we're going to hire to bring in house.
So one mistake I made up front in introducing our guest today, Brian Clayton, his company is GreenPal. The website is www.yourgreenpal.com. So I apologize for not mentioning that up front.
Either one.
Yeah, greenpal.com.
Yeah. Yeah, either one.
My mistake on not double checking that. So thank you.
No worries. Yeah, either one will get you there.
All right. Well, good. Yeah, it's good that greenpal.com gets you there. One thing I wanted to ask you about the business about GreenPal, for those of us who have lawns and have hired a contractor or a company to work with us, what are some of the mistakes that homeowners make in hiring a lawn care company? Are there some of those mistakes that GreenPal helps them avoid?
Yeah, it's like we live in this Uber-like world, Amazon-like world, where the one of my favorite quotes is a Jeff Bezos quote, and he says, "The thing I love about the customer is that they are relentlessly discontent." Mm-hmm. And so homeowners will carry this mentality that they have from, like, I pushed a button and I ordered a box of toothpicks on Amazon and it showed up in an hour, free shipping. Yeah. and so they think that they should be able to hire a home service contractor in the same fashion. And it's very different. Like this, like if you hire a plumber or a pool guy or a lawn guy, it's not like the plumber is not a SKU. This is a human being that has to charge you, you know, by the hour. That and so there is a gap, I guess you could say, of expectation versus reality. Now that said, it's our app's job to close that gap as much as we can to make it magical in nature by making it a lot more efficient to conduct this service on top of our technology. So homeowners, if the mistake that they make a lot is they just think they should be able to sit back, kick back, and just hire somebody, and they'll show up and give them a free estimate within 20 minutes of calling them, and then they hire them, they show up tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock on the dot. That's not the way it works. So broaden your expectations, manage your own expectations, and the more time you can save a home service provider, the better experience you will have. And so this doesn't matter if you want to hire a pool contractor or a landscaper or somebody to fix the hole in your roof. If you can, like, take pictures, videos of whatever the hell it is, mm-hmm. and text that to the contractor, a lot of times they can quote you something over the phone without having to come out to your yard or come out to your home the same day or next day. So my advice is put yourself in the shoes of the contractor you're looking to hire. It can make your life a lot easier if you can make their life easier, mm-hmm. to help them help you.
Yeah. And, you know, some of these companies or contractors are very busy these days. People are, you know, have been doing pandemic home projects while they're there. And it can be difficult to find somebody sometimes. Like I use a company to do my lawn in Texas. It's a company, and I think it helps avoid the mistake of hiring a guy with a lawnmower. Like, it's a company with insurance, and you know everything is being taken care of properly. But Jimmy is the owner. He's the guy I deal with, so I'm going to personify the company as Jimmy. And you know, I've talked to Jimmy, and he says, you know, he's been so busy that he's actually having to turn down new work, which makes it hard. I'm glad to have him, and I want to keep Jimmy and his team. But I'm wondering if part of the value proposition for somebody like Jimmy, if they're using GreenPal, at some point, do you help them, if they're in a position where they can pick and choose their customers, picking customers that are kind of in a better geographical location so that they're spending less time driving around town and more time doing work that gets them paid?
Yeah, so the reality is, if Jimmy has more than one employee, Jimmy hates GreenPal. And here's why.
What's that?
Because if you're working for Jimmy, he's paying you $15, maybe $20 an hour to go out and take care of your property. And then, and what happens is, and this could be, Jimmy probably has a lot of trouble and problems finding good employees and keeping them.
That's his constraint in bringing on new customers.
Unfortunately for Jimmy, GreenPal adds even more pressure, because if you work for Jimmy, why is he going to work for you for $20 an hour when he can download GreenPal and make $75 an hour? Because now he's in business for himself.
Oh, interesting.
And
okay.
So we have 30,000 plus service providers that are one man, one woman operators. Sometimes they have a helper or two, but your big companies that are 5, 10, 20 people don't get any value out of our platform because they already have their systems. They already have their processes. It's kind of like the big taxi cab company with the fleet of yellow cabs doesn't really like the fact that anybody with a Toyota Camry can now compete with them. And so it's the same type of disruption, I guess you could say. Not that there's any kind of like lawn mowing mafia that owns the lawn mowing business. There isn't. It's very fragmented. But we add even more pressure onto those mid-level operators. Now, if they maintain commercial properties or really super high-end homes, that's not the space we compete in. We more or less compete in your super basic services, you know, your every week, every 2 week mowings that are like $35. And a lot of contractors don't even want to mess with that stuff. A big channel for us is big landscaping contractors who get like 10 phone calls a day, and they don't want to go do the basic like $28 lawn mowing. Mm-hmm. They say, hey, just download GreenPal. You'll find a great small operator to take care of. I swear, like that's where a lot of our traffic comes from.
Interesting. And so, yeah, thank you for clarifying some of that. You know, well, it's your business, so thankfully you understand who your customers are and what your business model is and what those customers need. So, you know, back to the introduction, that does make a lot more sense of why Entrepreneur Magazine called you the Uber for lawn care. It helps connect more individual to individual.
That's right. That's right. And makes it a lot easier to do it versus the old way. Because if you're a homeowner, finding Peter in a pickup, Chuck in a truck, believe it or not, Molly in a mower. We have a lot of female-led vendors, and they actually statistically do a better job and have happier customers. It can be a pain in the butt because you don't like they don't have a web presence. They don't have a receptionist. They don't have somebody to pick up when you call. They don't have like a billing system. And so GreenPal solves all that, enables you to kind of hire them off the shelf, quickly schedule them, get pricing, book them, pay them, and then set it and forget it. And GreenPal makes all that happen for you. And that's one of the drawbacks of working with a smaller provider versus a Jimmy. Like you said, he's a professional company. He's got insurance. He's got great trucks and uniforms and stuff. I don't have to worry about all this other stuff. And so we close the gap between the smaller service provider and that guy to give you kind of even better experience at a better price is where we exist.
Yeah. Cause you know, there's certain advantages to working with the Jimmy or maybe even through an app. We get so used to just paying for everything through our phones. Jimmy sends me an invoice, a couple taps, I pay with Apple Pay. Where in the past, if I was using, you know, basically a guy with a truck and a mower, having to leave a check under the doormat.
Yeah.
If I'm not home, and then I want to make sure he got paid. And so for a bunch of reasons, I switched over to a company. And I guess those are the things those of us on the consumer side are trying to navigate.
Yep, exactly. And a lot of times, if Jimmy, for whatever reason, scales his business back or no longer services your part of town or something, a lot of times homeowners get displaced. Now they gotta go look for a lawn guy, or the lawn guy they had flaked on them, disappeared. And then so they arrive, they never heard of GreenPal, but they do a search for lawn mowing service nearby me in, I don't know, Lincoln, Nebraska, and we pop up as an option for them because they're like, oh, what the hell is this? Let me try this. And then they're quick, oh yeah, now this is the way to do this. So it's a lot of times it's somebody already had a lawn guy, but they disappeared or flaked or went out of business. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we come in.
Well, I hope not to lose Jimmy and his team, but
hopefully not.
If I do, now that I know about GreenPal, I'll go definitely go check you out and encourage people to do that here as we're getting into the summer season, and we're hopefully looking at nice lawns that given conditions in our area or watered responsibly and appropriately. And, you know, I've had, you know, lawn guy point out, hey, you're overwatering, which is not just a waste of water, but not good for the lawn. So having someone who can point out the mistakes you might be making as a homeowner, very, very helpful.
Definitely don't want to do that.
Well, Brian, thank you so much again. Our guest has been Brian Clayton, co-founder and CEO of GreenPal, you know, multiple times entrepreneur, growing different businesses. You know, I really appreciate because it, you know, the stories and the reflections you shared, it, you know, it goes to show that, you know, people have been successful, are learning from their mistakes. And thank you for being so open about that.
Well, thank you, Mark. And thanks for having me on your show. I had fun today.
Well, again, thanks so much to Brian Clayton for being here today. For links and a transcript and show notes and more, look in your app in the show notes there or go online to markgraben.com/mistake184. As always, I want to thank you for listening. I hope this podcast inspires you to reflect on your own mistakes, how you can learn from them or turn them into a positive. I've had listeners tell me they started being more open and honest about mistakes in their work. And they're trying to create a workplace culture where it's safe to speak up about problems, because that leads to more improvement and better business results. If you have feedback or a story to share, you can email me, myfavoritemistakepodcast@gmail.com. And again, our website is myfavoritemistakepodcast.com.